Chapter 24, that's not what's in your bulletin, and just have some thoughts that I'd rather share with you out of that chapter, and feels will be where my heart's at tonight. And I want to exhort you, and what that means is that I don't have the energy to preach. I don't feel like I have the energy, so I'm going to exhort. That means I talk, and maybe I'll preach, but not, it was an exhortation, I'll let you know that. Extortion, no. Matthew chapter 24, and I want to read the first 13 verses. Jesus here is speaking, by the way. He's at the temple, and he's with his disciples, and so they're discussing the temple. Verse 1. Now Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came up to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, "Do you not see these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down." Now, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "Take heed that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many, and you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. And then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will also hate one another. And then many false prophets will rise and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved." Jesus is talking to his disciples. They're there on the Temple Mount. And the topic of conversation is what will become of the temple. Jesus makes an astonishing statement to them there. He says that not one stone will be left on another. Now, the temple was an amazing building, and even at that time it wasn't completed. Herod had worked on it for many years, and the temple had been under construction for decades. It was a massive building. And it was an astonishing thing that Jesus would say, "You see that temple, it won't be standing. The day is coming when it will be completely destroyed." Now, looking back, with our hindsight, we know that that happened about 40 years after Jesus' ministry. In 70 AD, the Romans came into the city, surrounded the city. Eventually, they sieged the city. Many people died on the inside. In fact, Josephus says almost 1 million people died. They died of starvation. Horrendous things happened inside of the city. The Jews gave it up. It was essentially razed to the ground. And from my understanding, for centuries after that, 200, 300, 400 years, it was sown in grass. Sheep ate there. It became a pasture. That's how completely historians say that it was destroyed. Now, Jesus is talking to them about when that will happen, and he's trying to let them know about how that will the situations which will precede the destruction of the temple. But what he gives us is really a blueprint of troubled times, because he's talking about a specific instance, the destruction of the temple and the horrendous things that will happen with that destruction. But he's also talking to us, I think, more generally, because he gives us several things which will happen to the Jewish people, even to the Christians who are living there among the Jews in Jerusalem. And he says, "For this cause, for these reasons, the love of many will wax cold," in verse 12. And when it says wax cold, it actually means their fire will be blown out. There's a picture there of a candle being extinguished by the wind. And so what he's saying is, because of the things that are coming on the nation, people are going to give up. They're commitment to Jesus is gonna be blown out. They're just gonna stop. They're gonna quit. The inner fire is going to be completely extinguished. Now, perhaps they wouldn't have quit going to worship. Perhaps they would have continued to be involved in a body of believers. But he says, for all intents and purposes, their hearts are going to be void of fire. They're going to be destroyed inside. There's not going to be anything there of warmth. Their commitment is going to be completely destroyed. Their faith is going to be broken down. Now, you look at the characteristics then. What are going to be the things that produces the waxing cold among those people? And you'll notice one thing, I think there are more than four, but let me just point out four. One thing is in verse 5 and verse 11, the arrival of false prophets, false Christ. That's one of the components that's going to cause their spiritual decline, the fire to burn out. And that's something that they experience, but that is an everywhere, every time problem for all Christians. You talk about people giving up on the faith, when you talk about people quitting and giving in. One of the reasons people quit on God at any time, in any place, is the arrival of false teachers. People who claim to know Christ, but people who are in leadership positions, but they really aren't conduits of the Spirit of God. I think if you're around the church long enough, God bless you, but there's always going to be a pastor, a brother, a sister, a doctor. There's somebody in leadership which will ultimately, if you're in the church long enough, which will ultimately disappoint you in some way, which will ultimately, if you allow it, lead to spiritual destruction inside of your heart. My father and I have visited a lot of churches together in our time, and we would ride together, we'd go to revivals, and we would go to camp meetings, sometimes we would go into a church where a picture of each former pastor was on a hall. It's usually in a hallway. And I know what Dad's going to say when we get to the car. He won't say anything. We walk down the hall. There's a picture of all the former pastors. But when we get in the car, he always says the same thing. He'll say, that's the dumbest ideal that a church could think of. Why would they put all the pastors lined up? Because you know if they had 10, they had one stinker. I mean, if you put 10 pastors, you're not going to get 10 in a row without one of them being a bomb or running off with a pianist or stealing money or something. I mean, you can't get 10 pastors in a row without one of them being a real stinker. And if you start that, you're going to put his picture there or her picture there for all eternity. And I mean, you can't have, you know, 1946 to 1952 and a gap between 52 and 60. And people ask, what's the gap about? And you say, well, that was so-and-so. I mean, you're going to have to put all the pictures up. There's always a problem there. It's always a stinker. Now, pastoring's hard. Church leadership is hard. I like Gary Kinnaman's quote. Let me read it to you. He's trying to encourage pastors here who are depressed. And he says this. He says, there is no other vocation where it is required to represent God by talking to sophisticated, materialistic, entertainment-prone audiences who need to be told truths that they don't want to hear and be grateful enough for the telling to put money in the collection plate. Leadership is hard in the church. And I'm tended to give all leaders a break because I'm a leader and I want grace, so I tend to give grace if I can. I want to give grace. But the truth of the matter is, even when you're doing your best, and there's a lot of failures, even I see them every day in my own life. There are always things that you can do better and always things that you wish you had done differently. And, you know, I resigned my church that I'd pastored for 8 years, 7 months ago. And And I stood before the people on that day, and I had a whole list of things to apologize for. I told them, give me space. It was my first church, and if I could go back, there would be a lot of things that I would do differently. And I named some of the things that I might have done differently. Leaders are frail. Leaders have their issues, and I feel that in my own being. But having said that, leaders can get off track. They can disappoint you. Boards, pastors, you know, everybody can disappoint you. And that is one of the things that will contribute to you just wanting to give up. Makes you want to quit. Leaders fail you. You just want to say, what's the use, you know? Church is corrupt. I'm going to give up on the church. But don't do that. One of the other things here, first of all, he says false prophets are going to rise up. He said also there's going to be sorrows. You notice that he named several things there, earthquakes, I think pestilence, famine, and he talks about that being the beginning of sorrows. And what are earthquakes, famines, pestilence? Oh, what is all that? Those are things that kill people. Earthquakes, famines, people starved to death. Pestilence, that means that leads to starvation. And he's saying terrible things are going to happen to people. Awful things are going to happen to people. And he said there's going to be great sorrow that comes upon you. And because of the sorrow, you're going to want to quit. You're going to want to give up on God. The word sorrow there in the Greek literally means to travail, as a woman travails in birth, or as a man travails with kidney stone. It's a lot more painful than birth, but you know what I'm saying. But as you travail to pass something, that's what's going on there. And he said it's just going to be excruciating, and because of the pain, because of the sorrow, people want to quit. And that was a problem they had, but that's a problem that you and I have. Sorrow will make you want to quit on God. I think it was Walter Cronkite, a newsman, who said that in his opinion, when you watch somebody, and I'm paraphrasing here, when you watch somebody you love suffer a debilitating illness, or you yourself suffer a debilitating illness, that he can't imagine anything that would be harder on the faith than those two things. He says something to the fact that even if you're an agnostic, you have to wonder what kind of celestial crap game's going on. When you're hurt, and when you're sorrowing, and when life is squeezing you, and when things are happening that you can't understand. I mean, listen, I know the Bible says that all things work together for good for those who love the Lord and are called according to his promises. But it never says that he will let you know what's going on. See, all things can work to your good. Even the sorrows can work to your good, but there isn't any promise that God's going to tell you how they're working to your good in this life. And that can create a lot of sorrow. And you have, for instance, David in Psalm chapter 13:10. He essentially says, will you forget me forever? I think that's the way he says it in Psalms 13, verse 10, or maybe verse 1 there. He says, will you forget me forever? Where's God? I can't find him anywhere. I'm hurting. I'm in pain. But it seems like my prayers aren't getting anywhere. And that's a very real thing that Christians experience. Unfortunately, that's what we experience. And that can be very hard on your faith. Notice something else here he names. He says religious leaders can do it. He says sorrows can do it. He mentions pressure. Tribulation, pressure. Let me find it here. Somewhere. It's in there, isn't it? If you find it, see, tell me. Yeah, verse 9. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation. Tribulation literally means pressure or force. You're being squeezed. You're being crushed. And that's something that can really happen in a Christian's life. You get into a place where it seems like all the wind's in your face. All the waves are coming in. Nothing's going out. It seems like all you do is climb the mountain and you can never get to the top, and you're just pushing and pushing and pushing, and all there is resistance against you. We go to the beach, and one of the things I love to do is just fish off the pier, but you know, you have to fish into the wind, because at least people say the fish come with the waves, and the, you know, wind pushes the waves. But when you're there and you're just holding on to your pole, and it's March and it's 50 or, you know, 60 degrees, and then the temperature's falling, and you're just sitting there, and the wind's just, you know, for 4 or 5 hours, it's just, and it's the pressure. It's like, maybe I should fish on the other side where there aren't any fish. But, I mean, life can be like that. It's just the continual pressure that just doesn't ease up on you. And he's saying that they're going to experience that. And in my life and in your life, you can go through those seasons where it just seems like the pressure won't let up. Something else here, he says that false teachers, false leaders, sorrows can do it, tribulation can do it. Verse 12, he says also lawlessness can do it. Lawlessness means sin or iniquity. He said lawlessness will abound. The old King James says iniquity abounds. And what we're talking about is that all around, everywhere you look, there's sin. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It seems like everywhere around, everybody else has quit. Sin and iniquity are all around you. You're in school. You look around and everybody's forsaken God. I mean, nobody's serving God here. You can do that in your family, in any avenue that you're in. You can be overwhelmed by just the sin and iniquity and the lawlessness that's all around you. And you say to yourself, listen, nobody's serving God. Why should I serve God? Nobody cares about doing right. Why should I continue to care about doing right? But when you work in a situation like that, it's like you say, why try? It just seems hopeless. Iniquity is all around me. Why should I even continue to stand in the middle of this? And Paul is saying, I mean, Jesus is saying to these people, he's saying, the time is coming. Religious leaders are going to let you down. Sorrows are going to overtake you. Pressure is going to mount. The wind is going to blow in your face. All around you, it's going to be, it seems like people are quitting and giving in and not serving the Lord. He said, when all those times come upon you, he says, the love of many is going to wax cold. He said, a lot of people are going to give up. Their faith is going to quit. They're going to give in. But he's saying, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do that. Now, why shouldn't you give in when everybody's quitting and the pressure and the sorrows are mounting and all the religious leaders seem to be failing you? Why shouldn't you quit? And I think the Bible gives us a lot of different things to say on that issue. Let me just exhort you for a while. Let's exhort you. Let me give you one reason why you shouldn't quit. One reason you shouldn't quit is because you shouldn't be surprised when all those things happen. You shouldn't be surprised. If the Bible tells us anything, it's to not be surprised when tribulation and sorrows and iniquity. Listen, you shouldn't be surprised when any of that stuff happens. Jesus himself said, in this world, you will have tribulation. John 15, verse 18 says, they've hated me, they're going to hate you. Time and time and time and time and time again in scriptures, we're told it's going to happen. Don't expect an easy ride. Don't expect for people to like you because you're doing well. Don't expect for everything in the church to go well. Don't expect for all the religious leaders to hold fast till the end. Don't expect for everybody to do everything right all the time. Don't expect to live a life without sorrow. Don't expect that kind of thing. Listen to me. You believe in a devil, don't you? You believe in a devil, don't you? Do you believe he gets mad when good things are happening among God's people? Surely you believe that. That's all in the Bible. So why wouldn't you expect for him to be rearing his ugly head repeatedly? Anytime things are going good, why are you constantly surprised when the devil shows up and things turn into a disaster for a while? It's all over the place. That's what happens in the Bible. Why would anybody be surprised by all of that? Remember the lady, and she was always afraid somebody was going to break into her house. And for 20 years, she was always thinking somebody was going to break into her house. Every little noise in the night, she'd make her husband go down, find out what the noise was. And so it was a constant thing with her. She was always afraid somebody's going to break in the house. And one day, she hears a noise. She sends her husband down. He's going through the house. And sure enough, somebody's broken into her house. And there's the thief. And the husband says to the thief, "My wife's right upstairs. She's been expecting you for 20 years. Listen. Why are we surprised? Why are we surprised with tribulation? Why are we surprised with sorrow? Listen to me. Jesus Christ lived a sinless, holy life. And he was nailed to a cross. He was a man of sorrows. He was rejected of his own people. He died a very lonely death. Why do you think that if you live a godly life, bad things aren't going to happen to you? The Bible tells you it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. The only perfect man they nailed to a cross. You can't expect tribulation. They hated him. They're going to hate you. Expect it. I'm always amazed when people expect a perfect church. Haven't you read your Bible? Haven't you read it? Corinthians had all the spiritual gifts. They were suing each other. There's all kinds of stuff happening. They're getting drunk at the Lord's Supper, chapter 11. Galatians 1:6, Paul says, "I'm amazed that you have departed from the gospel so quickly. What is wrong with you?" John is writing. The time John writes to Ephesus, I believe it's Ephesus, I believe that's where John writes, Antichrist have already entered in. Jesus writes to the churches in Asia, 5 out of the 7 are doing an egregious thing. One's left their first love. One's engaging in iniquity, false doctrine. Why are you surprised that the church is imperfect? Why don't you expect it? It just happens. It just happens. Godly people, they work through it. You do your best. You strive. You pray. You fast. Satan fights, and hopefully you fight harder. Satan works. Hopefully you gang together. You pray harder. God brings you through. The Holy Spirit brings you through. So you shouldn't stop, because you've been warned it's going to happen. You've been warned it's going to happen. It shouldn't be a surprise to you. Secondly, you shouldn't stop even when life gets tough. The pressures mount, difficulties happen, out of sheer gratitude. Out of sheer gratitude to God. Listen to me, God's been good to me. I have healthy kids, and even if I didn't have healthy kids, I got kids. I got a wife who loves me, and better or worse, good sermon, bad sermon, illustrated, non-illustrated. Throw her under the bus for make a point, brag on her. She loves me regardless of all of that. Got a good wife. God brought us together. I'm grateful for that. He saw me through a lot of difficult places in life. He seen me through some health stuff. He has been with me faithfully in my ministry. When things didn't work, the Lord blessed, and things did. I've met a mess of things, and He's come along and helped me. I was telling somebody, seems like half the time I preach, I'm Balaam's donkey. It's like the Lord's used the donkey more than He's used a preacher. I mean, the Lord has been there. He's given me so much. I can't quit on Him now. Can't quit on Him when pressure comes and tribulation comes and sorrow comes. That'd be an act of ingratitude for all that He's brought me through. I can't quit on Him when things get a little tough. Gratitude should keep you going. Gratitude should keep your faith up. Another reason if you quit when things get tough, it can be disastrous. Remember in Luke 14, and Jesus is talking and he's warning those people who want to follow him, and maybe they're a little eager to follow him. And Jesus said, now hold up, before you want to follow me, before you come forward, you need to count the cost. You need to count the cost. If you're going to build a tower, you need to count the cost. The tower that he's speaking of, I think, is a tower in a field. And the harvest would come, they would build towers, and they would have people in little towers to oversee the field. And they could see if there were thieves. They could see what was going on. The foreman could be in the towers overlooking. And he said, but, you know, don't build a tower if you don't have all the wood. Don't build a tower if you don't have enough to finish it, because it can make you a laughingstock. It can be a public embarrassment. People will say you started a tower and you couldn't build it. You'll be a joke. And then he said, and then think about a king, and he's going to go to war, and he's got to think about whether with 10,000 men he can defeat an army of 20,000 men. Because if he doesn't count the cost and ends up in that war, he could lose his whole army. By connotation, he could lose the whole war. He could lose his whole kingdom. It could be disastrous for him if he hasn't counted the cost. And Jesus is saying that's what happens. If you start and don't finish, it can be embarrassing. It can be disastrous. And that's true. To quit on God can be a disaster. It can be a disaster to other people. When you start the Christian faith, people count on you. People count on you. Peter talks about the church as being lively stones, and we're built upon another. And the connotation there is if you take one of the stones out, the building can start to shift there. And when a person quits the faith, it can be a disaster to other people. We are built upon each other. And when you renounce the faith and walk away, you may think that it has no consequence, but it does. We are built upon each other, and other people may very likely leave the faith because you've left the faith. It can be a disaster to other people, and it can be a disaster to you. I still believe that Satan doesn't want disciples. He wants to destroy you. Remember Peter, he wanted to sift Peter like wheat, Luke 22:31, I believe. Satan is out to destroy you. When you walk away from God, he has hated the commitment that you have made to God, and he doesn't throw out the welcome mat and say, welcome home, old disciple. Welcome into my family. No, he seeks to destroy. He seeks to devour. And when you leave God, you leave God's protection, and you leave yourself open to the worst that Satan can do to you. Be disaster to quit. So you don't want to quit. You should have known these problems were coming. You should have known there was going to be tribulation and pressure. You should have known that there was going to be sorrows. Gratitude itself ought to keep you going, because there have been good times in the faith. God has been good to each of us. It'd be a disaster to quit. Fourth reason, and I'll be finished. One of the reasons I won't quit, and I don't think you should quit or anybody should quit, is because none of us are finished with what God has called us to do. We're not. I went home on Saturday for a birthday party with my family, and a lot of kids there. My brother just had a son 2 months ago, and the family is growing and lots of babies and that kind of thing. And you know what? I still want to see him saved. There's a lot of people I want to see come to the faith that haven't come to the faith yet. There's a lot of building to be done. There's wonderful things God wants in this church. There's wonderful things that God wants to do in his kingdom. There's work to be done yet. The harvest fields are still white. They're still white. And I'm not going to quit. And you shouldn't quit. Nobody should quit. Because there's still work to do. We still want to see the face of Jesus. We still want to go forward. We still want to finish the last lap running. going to finish that way. And so even in spite of all the things that can happen in the Christian life, listen, we owe it to God out of gratitude. We shouldn't be surprised. Listen, Satan is out there. We can't give him a foothold in our life. There's so much work to do, and there's 100 other reasons not to quit. Don't quit where you're at. You say, I'm sick, I'm tired, I'm worn out, I'm sick and tired of being sick. I mean, if I took a stress test today, or you know those stress tests where they, you know, they give a numerical value to what you're going through, and if you're at a certain number, you're almost assured to have a nervous breakdown, physical breakdown in 3 to 6 months. I mean, if you say, you know, if I took one of those, I'd be off the charts. Listen, don't quit. Don't quit. If you're sorrowing, don't quit. If you're under pressure, the wind just keeps coming, don't quit. Don't quit. Keep going. Rest a while. Rest a while. It's okay to lay down in green pastures. The Lord provides us times of rest. Take the times of rest, but don't quit. Keep going. Remember the woman and telling old jokes now. I'm going way back. Telling Ralph's jokes, using Ralph's illustration. Remember the woman, and she's her husband's a real boozer, and he always comes home, and he'll come home late in the night, and he comes home drunk and stammering around, and he can't see, and you know, he's just blind, you know, almost blind drunk, you know, and she's tired of it, she's fed up, and so she says, I'm gonna teach him a lesson. So she puts a sheet over her head and she hides around the side of the house. So 2 o'clock, he's coming in the back door, and she jumps out with the sheet over her to scare him, and he doesn't know what's going on. He staggered, but he thinks she's a ghost, so he starts running, and there's a cemetery next to their house. So he takes off, he's running through the cemetery, and she takes off after him. There they are running through that cemetery, and he gets winded and out of breath, and he sits down and leans up against one of the tombstones. She catches up with him, she's winded, she's out of breath, she sits down beside him, the sheet over her head, and they sit. And she catches her breath, and she looks at him and says, boy, we sure ran well there, didn't we? He catches his breath and said, yeah, and when I get my strength back, we're going to run again. We're going to go again. It's okay to sit down. It's okay to take a break. Pain and sorrow and physical pain, illness that just won't seem to quit, it can cause you to want to sit down and take a break. The Lord is our Sabbath. Jesus is our Sabbath. He gives rest. He makes us to lie down in green pastures. That's fine. It's fine. You're disappointed in people. It's okay to say, I just need to sit down and catch my breath. Pressure, it's okay to sit down. Say, I'm going to catch my breath. The Lord can help you. He can restore you. He can give you strength. Don't quit. Don't quit on God. He's told you it was going to happen. Shouldn't surprise you. You ought to have gratitude towards God. Be grateful for what he's brought you through. Don't give Satan an inch in your life. Like John Knox. Remember John Knox? He won Scotland for Christ. I think I used this here. He won Scotland for Christ in his 40s and 50s. Great evangelist. Great Scottish evangelist. But early in his life, in his 30s, he had a really dry place in his life. And he's had something in his diary during that time. Now, this was years before he won Scotland. But he said, I will keep the ground I've been given. And by his grace, the Lord may decide to ignite me again. But ignite me or not, by his grace and in his power, I will keep the ground I've been given. And he kept the ground, and the Lord did ignite him, and he did a marvelous thing for the Lord. There was a resting there, but he rested, he caught fire, and he ran again. Don't quit on God. He hadn't quit on you. He didn't quit on you in Gethsemane. And because he didn't quit on you in Gethsemane, listen, if he was going to quit on you, it would have been there. He didn't quit on you there. Don't you quit on him in your Gethsemanes. Keep going. Go strong. Let's stand together.